Case number 07-1306 et al. ExxonMobil Corporation Petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Parrish for Union Power Partners et al. Petitioners. Mr. Mapes for ExxonMobil Corporation Petitioner. Mr. Grover for Utility Petitioners. And Mr. Soper for the respondents.
May it please the court, I'm Ashley Parrish, counsel for the Tenasca entities, Union Power, and Las Vegas Power. I'll be addressing this morning the issues common to all generator petitioners. Mr. Mapes, counsel for ExxonMobil, will be addressing the issues specific to his client. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, this is the fifth case to come before this court involving a situation where these same utilities are seeking to violate the Commission's well-established regulations. With one exception, the key exception, the Commission and the generator petitioners in this case are in agreement. The Commission agrees that the utilities have once again violated its regulations. The Commission agrees that the generators are entitled to have their agreements revised to reclassify the facilities as properly classified as network facilities. And the Commission is in agreement that the generators are entitled to credits for the financing they provided to upgrade the network. The key disagreement between the parties is that although the Commission sought to give the generator petitioners the maximum protection it could under the statute, it believed that its hands were tied. The reason the Commission believed that its discretion and hands were tied was because it believed that the generator petitioners were seeking retroactive refunds of rates paid for transmission services provided by the utilities. This morning, I'd like to focus on 2 points. First, the Commission has before this case consistently stated and made a definitive interpretation of its regulations that the financing provided to upgrade the network is not a rate for service. So the Commission here cannot change its opinion. It certainly hasn't justified its change in position, but it can't change its position without going through notice and comment. And second, Your Honors, I would like to make the point that the generators here in their complaints are not seeking to do anything to change the rates for transmission services. They were merely seeking a reimbursement for the loans they provided. Where the Commission errs is that it's confusing the character of the upfront financing with the nature of the repayment mechanism. But how the loan is repaid does not change financing for service.
When the interconnection agreements were executed, it wasn't a loan.
Your Honor, when the interconnection agreements were executed, the facilities were not classified as network facilities. So at that point, it was not characterized as a loan. That is correct.
It was not a loan.
It was a loan, Your Honor. Yes.
No. It did not become a loan until the Commission ruled that those facilities were, enhanced the network, and that was not until January of 2007, was it?
That's right. Your Honor, I understand your point, but what we would say is that it was not recognized as a loan until the facilities were properly classified. And the reason for that is that the Commission has made very clear that when facilities are made to located on or at or beyond the network, they are being used to upgrade the network for the benefit of all parties. So it is true that at the time they were not recognized as a loan, but their essence and character.
There was no repayment schedule. There was no interest in the interconnection agreements that was required or anything else.
There was nothing recognizing that at all. That is correct, Your Honor. But I think this goes to the key point as to whether or not.
And in your complaint with FERC, am I remembering correctly that in your complaint, you characterize this as a dispute over rate payments. Am I wrong on that?
I think you're wrong about that, Your Honor. In our complaint, we characterize this as a dispute over the question of whether the facilities were properly classified. And once the facilities are properly classified, at that point it is clear that the money that was used to upgrade those facilities was used for the benefit of all network users, and therefore it was in the nature of financing, and that's why we were entitled. Now, the key is that we are only seeking to have prospective credits, which means that we are looking to be able to recover that financing on a forward-going basis. The reason why there is mention of rates in the complaint itself and why the Commission focuses on this is, again, because of its AND pricing policy and the fact that typically the way that you get reimbursed for these loans is through a credit that gets applied against transmission rates. But we would make two points. One is that, again, the repayment mechanism, one isn't dictated. The parties can agree to repayment however they want, but the default is that you get these credits. And two, credits against a future rate is not the same as actually changing the rate. The purpose of the filed rate doctrine and the statutory requirements are to prevent changing the rate. But here, the rate for
there's a lot of purposes. That's one.
That is true, Your Honor. But I do think it's an important purpose, but I also think it's supported by our plain text reading. But most importantly, it's supported by what the Commission has said in its regulations.
You said something that, a couple questions. One is one of detail. I haven't found, what is the amount of money we're talking about here?
It's a $46 million total for the all of the different generators. There's three Tenasca entities. Right. There's Union Power, Las Vegas Power, and ExxonMobil.
You're saying the credit is $46 million for all of them?
I think that, just to be very clear, I think that's right. But what it is the total upgrades that were financing provided for network upgrades.
It is $46 million. And then how much of the, during the period prior to January 2007, unless I'm missing something, the way the Commission is doing this thing is that if you took $5 million worth of transmission service, right, then we're going to treat that as if it should have been a credit and you're not going to get so you only get $41 million back. Is that the way these things
work? That's the way they work, and that's why we think it doesn't make sense. What they're assuming is that rather than being prospective, which is to say the facilities are now reclassified and now what's the result of that going forward, that the Commission's sort of having it both ways. What it's saying is that the facilities are reclassified. We're now going to assume that the credits could have been applied even before they were reclassified and they will have dissipated. I think if I'm...
The whole credit mechanism strikes me as kind of odd. I mean, it means that if a generator puts $50 million to help helps the whole network and then hardly uses it, that generator is going to be paid back in a longer period of time than some clown that does $5 million and uses it up right away. Right? I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me because there's a free ride by all the rest of the people that are using the network.
I think I understand your question, Your Honor. What I would say to that as a sort of initial matter is these issues of, you know, whether the Commission's policy made sense or not, we've had many arguments on those, both in terms of as the regulations were challenged by the utilities and also in terms of each
Have
of the...
Have we ruled on that?
You've ruled in the sense that you've upheld the regulations, and you've also upheld the Commission's policy as applied in a context where there's a complaint that's filed or a protest that's filed right away.
But you said... unless I misunderstood, you said the parties can negotiate a different repayment schedule.
They can. So what happens is, let's assume that this is why it's really a financing mechanism, is if the parties were to say, instead of having credits, we're just going to say there'll be a lump sum payment. That actually happens quite often. The lump sum payment will just be given on the recognition that rather than dealing with credits, they prefer that. Or if they wanted to set up a payment mechanism that took place over a period of, say, 5 years, there'll be a payment. And that along with a couple of other features, including the fact that the utilities themselves can finance these upgrades and instantly roll them into their rates, don't need to deal with the generators at all, really underscores the fact that when the Commission said in the regulations that this is not a rate for service, it wasn't just engaged in passing dicta. It was actually responding to arguments made by the utilities, and it was defending its rules based on that, justifying that it wasn't a rate. And that had substantive consequences, including the features we've been discussing. And so I really, but going back to your question, Judge Randolph, I do think this is important. Our main focus of what I'm focusing on today is really the switch between its stated articulated justification for the regulations and now the position it's taking in the orders. But we also think that even if you got beyond that, the whole system doesn't make any sense. This idea that the credits dissipated before they accrued in and of itself, we think is arbitrary, and we don't think the Commission has said enough to justify its orders on that basis either.
What has it said to justify that idea?
Well, we don't think it said anything. I mean, if you take a look on the
that footnote on JA939, but beyond that, I don't, and that's not, that's just a description. That's not even a rationale.
Well, Your Honor, I mean, we completely agree. I mean, the focus of the commission was refuting our argument that this was a loan, and we think they engage in sort of circular reasoning on that. But I guess our point is that we think it's fairly clear that what the commission has said here is not sufficient to satisfy the demands of reasoned decision-making. But we also think that given what the commission has said in the past in its regulations, that you don't need to remand. And I know usually that would be an unusual circumstance for this case here, but once the commission decides to proceed by rulemaking proceedings, then it of its own exercise of discretion has chosen to narrow its discretion going forward in the future. And we think that given what it said in its regulations, it can't now offer any reasoned explanation, because to do so would actually unravel the regulations that it has promulgated. And so the only thing that the commission could do would be to open notice and comment rulemaking proceedings for future cases. But based on what it said in its regulations, for now, it really needs to our complaints need to be granted. I see my time's almost out. I'd like to reserve the remainder for my rebuttal, unless the court has questions, in which case I'd be happy to answer.
Seeing none, we'll hear from the next petitioner.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is William Mapes on behalf of ExxonMobil. I first wanted to note that ExxonMobil's situation and circumstances differ from the other generators. We fully support what Mr. Ashley has said and think that will resolve the case, but we do have distinct issues, and the court could affirm the commission as to its interpretation of 206B and yet still reverse as to the ExxonMobil cases. I did want to point out, I think Judge Randolph had a question that initially that when they were first classified as non-network upgrades and the significance of that. And in the ExxonMobil order, the first one, I believe it's page 2, paragraph 5, the commission states that the fact that these facilities were classified.
Is this page 2 of the joint appendix?
Yes, I'm sorry, sir. Paragraph 5. And it states that these facilities were classified as interconnection facilities in the original IA, does not transform them into non-network facilities. In other words, if they were properly classified, then from day one, they would have been network facilities. Next, I would like to mention.
Wait, which paragraph? I'm sorry.
Paragraph 5. Right before footnote 4.
Yeah. Now, what's the point of?
I think you had raised the question of whether it's not a loan because they didn't receive.
It wasn't classified as a loan when the interconnection agreements were executed. There's no question about that.
I'm sorry. I thought you had a question, and they were improperly classified at the outset. If they had been properly classified, it would have been a network upgrade.
Well, the only way to reform the contract is through the proceedings that under 206, right? I mean, it didn't reform the contract. FERC held it was unreasonable, unjust, et cetera, right?
That's correct.
Okay. But until FERC did that pronouncement, these interconnection agreements were binding, weren't they?
That is correct, yes. Okay. Perhaps I misunderstood your point.
Well, that's all.
In addressing FERC's brief, I just wanted to address one.
Address real quickly what your particular specific issue is as to Exxon that is not applicable to the other generator.
Yes.
You started in that direction.
Right.
You diverted.
I'm sorry.
Please address that. You don't have much time. I don't want to extend it too far. So state real quickly what makes you different than the other generator.
Right. Well, first, in FERC's brief at page 59, they state that ExxonMobil will be fully.
Never mind FERC's brief at page 59.
Okay.
Address what your issue is that makes you different from the other.
Okay. First, Your Honor, we have a situation of so-called sequential payments. We had two sets of facilities at the same point of an interconnection, but they were built at separate times. And we are saying that after FERC required the credits to be given for the Phase 2 facilities, which went into that they both went into effect at the same time. And we are saying that you have to wait till those facilities credits expire, and then you provide the credits for the phase two, the phase one
did
facilities.
Did you preserve that issue in your request for rehearing?
We did, Your Honor, and in fact, FERC repeatedly cites to our portion of the request for rehearing, despite the inference that we did not. And secondly,
you tell me where you preserved that. Give me a record, a JA page.
Yes, sir. It would be on JA 371 and JA
373.
And 374. Okay. And part of our position is that the Commission has violated its policy at JA 11, which is that you provide a dollar-for-dollar credit. And here they're providing every dollar transmission service provides a credit for $1 of the phase two facility cost and $1 for the phase one facility cost. And in fact, we have shown in our brief that FERC was discriminatory in that they allowed this type of sequential repayment in another case issued after ours in the Quachita power case. And finally, we contend that FERC had the authority and the duty under Section 205 to provide reimbursement.
Now, are these same issues pending in another proceeding before this court?
No, that is not correct, Your Honor.
Not correct.
The second proceeding that is pending is the issue of compliance with the Commission's orders. At JA 419, Entergy's compliance filing, in this proceeding says the recovery is going to be zero. What had happened is that Entergy mistakenly paid us another $1.3 million because they read the first order as requiring sequential payments. And now they wrote us an invoice saying, you owe us. And so that's the nature of the proceeding now before the Commission. And we are directly harmed by footnote 39 and the requirement that we are just disallowed the phase one amounts.
Unless my colleagues have further questions, your time has been up for some time.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Counsel.
Look at the scorecard to see who goes next. Utility petitioners would be next this morning.
May it please the court, Your Honor. My name is Scott Grover, and I'm here today on behalf of utility petitioners, Southern Company Services, Alabama Power Company, and Georgia Power Company.
I'd like you to address the standing issue. Do you stand to lose any money in this?
Your Honors, if Tanaska is successful, then we stand to lose $18 million. That's 18 of the 46 that Mr. Parrish referenced. How's that?
On your petition.
On our petition.
On your petition.
Your Honor, with respect to the order of the Commission, we did not have to pay any refunds. That's correct.
Okay. So what's your harm?
Our harm, Your Honor, lies in the fact that, first, we believe under the Energy 2 case, we're aggrieved by virtue of the fact that we have an adverse agency action against our live interconnection agreements with Tanaska. But moreover, as we understand the Sealand case and the International Brotherhood case, that provides us standing insofar as we're concerned about the preclusive effects of a commission order that is able to violate the filed rate doctrine, the rule against retroactive rate making, and recharge require that paid charges that were paid prior to complaints for charges that were paid and services were provided before the complaints were entered. And we have other agreements. They're in the record, Your Honor. The JA references those.
That would be the any harm to you is the possible effect of this litigation precedentially or even perhaps preclusively on other litigation, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
There is nothing in this litigation that the Commission has done that we can help you by changing it, is there? On your petition, I'm not somebody from the other side.
With respect to monetary damage, no, Your Honor.
Okay.
So, but Your Honor, our concern here is about the Commission's orders, and for the court to uphold that order, we're concerned that it would require upholding an order that violates the rule against retroactive rate making.
That by itself is not going to get you there. You're not aggrieved because the Commission's wrong. You're aggrieved if you're aggrieved.
Yes.
And your best grievance here is preemption or, excuse me, preclusion or precedent.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct, Your Honor. But I was stating our position with regard to the Commission's order because it is different.
Has the modification of the interconnection agreement affected your legal rights in some way?
Your Honor, I would admit that with respect, we've had to modify the agreements and rights have been changed, but we don't challenge on a prospective basis the changing of those rights. On a retroactive basis, it has. Mm-hmm. But on a prospective basis, I would recognize that we don't. And that's something I would want to make clear to the court, is we've been accused by both TANASCA and the Commission of trying to collaterally attack existing orders and the regulations, and that's not what we're doing here. We're not challenging that, notwithstanding concerns that we had, concerns echoed by Judge Randolph about what's going on with this policy. But it stands, and we're not here to challenge that. That's in the past. But what we're challenging is the retroactive application of that policy to these circumstances and these agreements, agreements that were entered into in 1999 and 2000 and that were filed with and accepted by the Commission in 2000.
Well, how does the alteration of the Internet Connection Agreement help your standing argument, or does it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
What I'm getting at is how does the fact that the interconnection agreement has been modified by FERC, how does that play into your standing argument?
Well, I would think insofar as it's invaded our legal right there, that could give us a basis for a grievance. I understand the court's concerns about the absence of having to have had to write a check.
Well, is there anything else? Do you have to have incurred legal fees to modify the contracts as a result of FERC's order? Do you have to go through any kind of compliance procedures in FERC that will?
We did have to file a compliance filing, yes, Your Honor.
Well, suppose that costs $10.
It certainly costs $10. It costs more.
Well, why doesn't that give you standing?
If Your Honor, it may well give us standing. I would hope that it does if what we've provided to the court thus far does not, because that is, in fact, the case. And we've cited that compliance filing in the record. I can get that cite for you, Your Honor. But the compliance filing is part of it.
It's not just the precedential value. It's maybe not great sums, but you had to go through some hoops as a result of FERC's rulings.
Quite a few, Your Honor. That's exactly right. Turning, though, to the Commission's orders.
Do you get that back if we rule in your favor on your petition?
I'm not aware that we do, Your Honor.
So is this a remediable harm for standing purposes?
I don't believe it is.
So if it's no remedy, then you don't have standing, do you? You have to have injury and you have to have causation, you have to have remedy. So if there's no remedy, then you don't have standing, do you?
Well, Your Honor, I guess, again, focusing on our standing, if we think under Sealand and International Brotherhood, that would be enough. But for the remedial aspect, again, I'm not sure if we're entitled to go back before FERC and seek that charge. Enough is being passed along to the ratepayers through this, thus that we probably wouldn't want to go forward with that. That being said, it may be an avenue available to us. But our concern about the order, and it's something I expect FERC will address, is the notion that it's not modifying a rate for interconnection, that it's applying its refund credit against a transmission service delivery rate only. And to that end, we would point the court to its precedent, specifically the Pacific Gas and Electric case, because we see that as guiding here. And so far as we look at exactly what the new credit relates to, we see that it is, in effect, the refund. I mean, Judge Randolph is exactly right. When these agreements were entered into, the provision was a charge. It was a directly assigned charge for facilities necessary for interconnection service. Those agreements are available for the court to look at, 1179 in the record and 1186 and 1187, and they're clear about that. And thus, when the Commission seeks to refund those charges paid prior to the complaints and with the services rendered prior to the complaints, it's refunding those paid charges. I mean, that's what the and pricing policy is all about. And the retroactive application of that policy cannot happen here. It cannot trump the rule of retroactive rate making and the limitations on the Commission's authority under 206 to afford refunds. We're not talking about charges that were incurred during the refund window or after the date of the orders. I mean, these are all charges that were incurred well before the complaints, and that's why the Commission's actions offend that doctrine. You know, furthermore, Your Honor, I would emphasize the distinction between the interconnection service. There's been statements by Tenasca that we're not dealing with a rate here, but we're dealing with a loan. I think first and foremost, the agreements belie that argument. But secondly, the commission has consistently treated interconnection service as a rate. We look at the early cases where we were dealing with contributions in aid of construction. There, they were treated as rates. You know, the prior notice order from 1994, I believe, is specific insofar as the interconnection service is a rate. And then going forward and throughout, through 2000, the actual order in 2004, embracing Tennessee Power, which makes the distinction between a rate for interconnection and a rate for delivery. Thus, there can be a little question as to the fact that we're dealing with a rate. Accordingly, for the commission to argue, as it has, that it's not affecting anything through its application of the credit to the delivery service rate really doesn't look exactly as to what the credit's directly tied to, which is what Pacific Gas and Electric and other cases of this circuit regarding the rule against retroactive rate making require. Accordingly, we think the file rate doctrine and the rule against retroactive rate making question is not a close one here. I think it's plain under this court's precedent, and that FERC's efforts in this regard cannot stand. And I think I'd go ahead and reserve the remainder of my time.
Okay, thank you, counsel. Unless my colleagues have further questions, we'll hear from, I guess we finally got to the governor. We'll hear from the governor.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel.
The commission here applied Section 206 to the complaints of the generators who were asking that their facilities be reclassified. First of all, I think there are a few fundamentals we have to look at. Yes, the interconnection agreements were a filed rate. There's no doubt about that. The filed rate doctrine, we use filed rate as a shorthand, but Section 205 and 206 of the Power Act say a wide variety of matters are covered by the Commission's jurisdiction: rates, services, contracts, practices, anything affecting jurisdictional
classifications,
service.
Classifications. Yeah. And classifications.
And classifications, exactly.
So this was, these were classified not as improvements to the network. They were just interconnection.
They were classified incorrectly. That's right, Your Honor. The interconnection payments, however, were not a loan. And in response to Judge Randolph's question, the policy about the interconnection payments was indeed raised in the Order 2000 rulemaking, and was the Order 2000 rulemaking was affirmed in its entirety by this court. So it's too late for the petitioners to be arguing that they don't like that policy. What the commission did here is explain, yes, in describing the upfront payment in the interconnection context, the preamble of the regulation says it's akin to a loan. There's no doubt about that. The commission said in these orders on review, it's not a loan. We don't have authority to make loans. We need a jurisdictional hook. It's a condition of service. It's a payment for service. If it was just an out-and-out loan, it would be beyond our jurisdiction. And contrary to what the generator petitioner said, the word loan is not mentioned in the regulations. The regulations strictly talk about repayment. The loan was merely a descriptive matter in the preamble to the regulations in order to help describe the repayment situation. What the commission did here was it applied 206 correctly. The crediting mechanism, which was upheld in 2003, it became part of the rate as of the time of the 206 change. We cannot change that any of this retroactively. Contrary to the utilities argument, the commission here specifically looked at 206. 206 embodies the filed rate doctrine, and it followed it to the letter. It said, okay, as of today, prospectively, we're fixing this so that these facilities are now transmission facilities. There's only a certain area of time where we can give refunds. It's 15 months, and the refunds are for credits that have not yet been paid. So there's no filed rate doctrine problem. The commission followed the filed rate doctrine.
Put that aside. What is the rationale? If one of the generators used $10 million worth of transmission services before FERC ruled, then FERC's going to pretend that they got $10 million of credit when, in fact, they didn't.
Well, they paid $10 million worth of transmission rates, and FERC found that it didn't have the authority under the filed rate.
The more you pay, the more, Mr. Generator, the more you pay the transmission operator, the less you're going to receive back on the money you put out to improve the entire system.
Now,
that seems to me to not make very much sense.
Well, not if it's done correctly, because if it's done correctly, the facilities are classified correctly and the payments start right away.
Well, no. I'm not talking about what would have been. I'm talking about this case. The rule of this case is that the more you have paid to the transmission operator, the less you're going to recover from the amount that you put in to improve the entire system.
And that's because 206 doesn't give us any leeway. The commission gets in trouble when it confuses 205 and 206.
206 doesn't say a word about the idea that you pretend they got a credit when they made a payment.
Well, it's not a matter of pretending. It's a matter of applying the 2003 rule, which was in effect. The commission's duty in 206 was to apply its rule prospectively. Under the 2003
rule didn't apply. The rule didn't apply. The rule only applied to situations in which the generators have gone ahead and done whatever they've done to improve the network. But I thought we agreed, maybe you didn't, that up until the time that FERC reformed these contracts, there was no such situation where the generators were entitled to get money back.
Well, that's right.
Right. Well, then how can you apply the rule to a situation that didn't exist? I don't get it.
Well, we're applying the rule prospectively only.
No. You're applying it retroactively because you're pretending that they got a credit when they didn't. And the only reason you're doing that is because you're applying your rule to a situation that didn't exist.
We're saying they paid their transmission rates. There's no question about that. And because our rule is that the credits come out of the transmission rates, we applied that rule prospectively.
You applied it retroactively. You applied it for the period before the filing.
No, Your Honor, because we only gave refunds for the 15-month period that we were allowed to.
And what are the amount of the refunds?
I think it was around $18 million, Your Honor.
It's the amount spent to improve the network less the amount of transmission payments that were made prior to the filing.
Right, because
isn't that retroactive?
As Your Honor has pointed out, rules is rules, and here the rule is that once the rate's on file, there's nothing we can do to go back and change that. The transmission rate was filed, and they were paying the transmission rate. The interconnection agreement was filed, and it held certain things that absolved the transmission provider from responsibility.
We've
changed it in 206.
No, you've changed it retroactively. You've changed it because $1 million in transmission payments is the functional equivalent of charging the generators $2 million. They put out the million and they lost another million because they didn't get a credit back. So you've charged them for every $1 million during the period before they filed, you've charged them twice the amount, right?
Yes, but the filed rate doctrine says if there's overpayment in the past or underpayment in the past, there is nothing the commission can do about that. This is a 206 case. The commission could only...
There's no policy behind it. This is just the strict construction of 206B.
It's a strict construction. It's the only construction of 206B and applying our interconnection policy.
Up until you adopted the new rule, what had been paid was under a just and reasonable rate, and you can't go back and undo a just and reasonable rate.
Once it's accepted, it's a just and reasonable rate.
Okay.
What if we...
Even if it turns out that it wasn't, and this court in Oxy and many other cases has addressed that, it may be no fair...
Oxy comes to mind,
Your Honor. There may be no fair, but there's nothing we can do about it.
What if we agree... What if we thought that there's another reasonable interpretation of 2006B or 206B?
Well, I mean, the commission...
Where do we look? You know, this gets us into one of these unresolved Chevron problems. The problem, let me just outline it for you. The problem is we know the commission has interpreted 206B in the manner that you're arguing. I mean, there's no question about that. What we don't know, apart from your statement that that's the only interpretation possible in the face of the statute, what we don't know is what the commission's rationale for it is besides looking at the words. We don't know any we can't figure out the policy because the commission never stated a rationale.
Oh, well, I don't think that's true, Your Honor. What the commission said was it was looking at its 2003 rule about how interconnection and transmission worked and applying that, the rule that had been upheld. And it said specifically, this is how the rule works.
Apart from the kind of wooden mechanical application, what is the rationale for charging them $2 million for every $1 million they
help transmission? The rationale was expressed in Order 2003. The rationale for them paying up front was expressed in Order 2003. The fact that they paid the wrong rate, as Judge Santel pointed out, it was the filed rate. It was just and reasonable until it was held differently. And so even though it's unfair. Yeah,
but don't you see, wouldn't you concede that this case is different? It's certainly different than any filed rate case I have ever sat on or dealt with, because it's not a question of what they paid. It's you, the agency, attributing to them payments that they never received. And so, yes, they paid their $1 million of transmission, but they didn't get a credit for it, right? And that makes it different than all the filed rate cases where there's a rate and they paid more than the rate that was on file, or the utility was trying to charge them more than the rate that was on file, or they're retroactively saying we paid too much, and et cetera, et cetera.
No, that is essentially what they're saying, the way the commission looked at it. They paid the generators paid the transmission rates.
Right, and didn't get a credit.
So once they paid those transmission rates, we can't go back and refigure this transmission rates, and that is exactly what the commission said.
Why isn't it a perfectly reasonable interpretation to say that because they didn't get credits, we know that until the time of the filing, and therefore, but we now hold that for the future that they have gone ahead and improved the network, and they ought to recover all of the amount in the future.
I think the reason the commission didn't answer that more specifically, if you look at the, for example, the Exxon rehearing request at JA 370, the argument that the right to credits began with the reclassification, that was not raised on rehearing.
Wait a minute. What's the issue?
Well, as I understand that what you're arguing here, and the generators have indeed argued this in their brief, is that the transmission credit should have sprung into operation at the time of the reclassification. I don't see that, as we pointed out in our brief. They didn't make that argument. You know, they made two arguments.
Well, Exxon said they won 100%. How could it otherwise be otherwise?
It said it wasn't a rate because it was a loan, and the commission dealt with that in detail, and it said it's no fair because it took too long, and the commission said, this is 206. There's nothing we can do about that.
Paragraph F, or subparagraph F.
Right. But when you look at their rehearing request, they didn't make this argument per se. So whether the commission would have found that maybe it could have applied Section 206 differently in that context, I don't know. I think the logic of the commission's position is pretty clear, but as our brief said, you know, maybe we would have had remedial discretion, and certainly the commission, I don't think, would mind having more remedial discretion under 206. But this court has clipped our wings on it quite often.
The upshot of this is that the generators have provided a benefit to all of the users of the transmission facilities, and and the users are getting a free ride to the extent that the generators paid for transmission costs before January 2006.
And that's the I don't want to call it the tragedy of the filed rate doctrine, but that's tough. It's, you know, that is the filed rate doctrine, and it's tough. But this court has often recognized.
No, it's not the filed rate doctrine. This case is unique,
but in fact,
you say it over and over again. In the unique circumstances of this case, how many times have you used that phrase in your brief?
It's unique in that was the only time we've ever had apply order 2003 and section 206. Yeah. But in terms of the actual application of the filed rate doctrine. I don't see
it's
it
not
that
unique that a filed rate doctrine application would prevent somebody
from recovering
something that they otherwise might have had justly and reasonably.
Exactly, Your Honor.
If in fact the commission said you recover the entire $46 million prospectively through credits, that then the cost would be borne by all of the shippers, right?
Right, and the utilities would be in here making their filed rate doctrine argument, and I think they'd have a serious argument. But that particular position wasn't raised, so it wasn't addressed per se. As far as the ExxonMobil specific arguments, once again, if you look at their request for rehearing, they didn't raise the Quijada case or whatever it was. They merely asked for a clarification about how things would work in view of their other case. Their other case, the compliance filings are on appeal before this court, and that can be resolved. Any issues raised there can be resolved at that time. They weren't raised in the rehearing. The commission didn't resolve it. They're on appeal.
And the same issues here, right? I mean,
well it's actually issues about how they're going, whether you sequentially apply the credits or how the new credits will fit in with the old credits. The commission didn't get into any of that. It said, we don't have to clarify. Pardon me?
I would say that's for the other.
That's for the, yeah, that, yeah, if the ExxonMobil still aggrieved at the end of the other proceeding, well, I guess they feel they are since they've already appealed it, the court can address those sequential issues and the remedy at that point. It's not ripe for review here. And finally, as far as the utilities argument is concerned, assuming they do have standing, it's clearest on page 9 of their reply brief, and counsel for the utility said it here again today. Well, we're arguing that the interconnection rate is separate from the transmission rate. Well, the answer to that is Order 2003 explained and codified earlier precedent by the commission. Interconnection rate is part of the transmission rate. It's part of the open access transmission tariff. And if the utilities had a problem with that, and indeed they did. They did raise it questions like that. And Order 2003 was affirmed completely by this court. In any event, as you know, I don't think the commission could have in any way honored the filed rate doctrine more than it did. It followed 206, which embodies the filed rate doctrine.
Is there an issue here? I should know the answer to this, but is there between in the petitions filed by the generators and the petition filed by the utility, and is there an issue about whether FERC had the authority to reform these interconnection agreements?
I don't think so, Your Honor.
Okay. Now the only
that was a routine application of.
But that's already been tested anyway.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But anyway, the application of part of so that would be under 206A, right?
Yes, right? Fixing a rate prospectively.
Okay, so it necessarily follows then that the remedy is governed by B. I mean, you don't have to get into any. As long as A, the authority under A is unchallenged, follows that what we're dealing with here is a remedy under B.
Absolutely, Your Honor, and that's what the commission said.
Yeah, okay.
No further questions? I think the order should be affirmed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. How much time left? We'll up it to two. Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to address four quick points. Judge Randall, starting with your last point about how 206A and 206B works. Second, emphasizing the fact that both counsel for both the commission and for the utility emphasizes the rate. I'd like to read to you quickly what they said in their regulations. And third, I'd just like to pick up on the point that there's not been a waiver, and I'll explain why. First, on the 206A, Judge Randolph, our point is that 206A and 206B are independent. The commission has authority under 206A, when you've reserved your Memphis Clause rights, to correct unjust and reasonable classifications and to set the reasonable and just classification going forward by order. Then the question is, well, does 206B apply? Well, we know that 206B cannot apply in all circumstances because there are terms and conditions of interconnection agreements that are not situations where under 206B you're seeking a refund in excess of what otherwise would have been paid.
Of course, and that's obvious. And 206B, to the extent that money's going to change hands, implies.
Well, Your Honor, remember here, this is key, is that one is when a bank provides financing and it seeks to recover that, is not seeking a refund. Second of all, we're not seeking anything in excess of what we paid because we're not disputing the fact that the amount paid for financing the upgrades was the proper amount. The question is, how do you characterize that? Which I think takes me to my second point, which is if you take a look at the JA 2079, this is order 2000A, paragraph 612 and 613.
JA
2079, Your Honor. And I'll quote, the upfront payment serves not as a rate for interconnection or transmission service, but simply as a financing mechanism that is designed to facilitate the efficient construction of network upgrades. That's in 612 and 613. The commission goes on to say, quote, the upfront payment is not a rate for service and thus is not intended to be the means by which the transmission provider recovers the cost of network upgrades. The counsel for the commission said, well, this is just in the preamble to the rule, but this is a definitive interpretation of the rule that was provided in response to arguments by the utilities that this was an improper subsidization of interconnection service and transmission service. And the commission said, no, it's not an improper subsidization because it's not a rate for service. They are bound by that, and nothing any of the council said this morning get around that. Second, Your Honors, I wanted to quickly make the point about the waiver. If you the idea that there's been no waiver, that there's been a waiver here of retroactivity doesn't make sense. The whole point of our complaints and our rehearing petitions, take a look at JA 1476.
Very quickly.
We said reclassify the facilities, and the whole point of asking you to reclassify the facilities is so that we can get credits prospectively. For the commission to then assume that you can retroactively reclassify the facilities is completely inconsistent with our complaint. Thank you, Your Honor.
You did, Mr. Grover? Okay, we'll hear from Mr. Grover. Unless you all have questions.
I'll be brief, Your Honors. I just want to make a couple of quick points. To us, the question really is, what are the credits? And if we look at the credits, we realize that they're a refund of pre-complaint charges for services fully rendered. It's you know, in the PG&E case, to crib from counsel there, they called it a euphemism, and we think that's the same here. The circumstances are such where it might as well have been that the commission told us to refund exactly what had been paid for those facilities. That's what the credits are. I mean, that's what the policy represents. And what is different here, though, is what Judge Randolph recognized from the outset is these weren't loans. They never provided them to be loans. They were directly assigned charges, and that was what the agreement was. There wasn't a repayment schedule. There was no expectation or opportunity for refund. And it wasn't until the commission exercised its authority under 206 and reclassified the facilities that if we're going to treat them as a loan or say anything that there would be an obligation of repayment, that occurred prospectively and only operates with respect to new charges. The old paid charges remain paid under the rule against retroactive rate making and the filed rate doctrine. Secondly, with respect to counsel for the commission, I would emphasize, and we do make this point, that we are talking about two different things here. We're talking about an interconnection service rate and we're talking about a delivery service rate. And I agree that the 2003 order makes it clear that they're components of transmission, but they are separate components, and the rates for them are separate. I think counsel for the commission would agree with me that it's clear that if charges for interconnection service or interconnection facilities, rather, are spent, the facilities are constructed, if there's no transmission service taken or they never go into commercial operation, rather, then there's no entitlement to credits. So there's not the linkage that I think is suggested and is wrongfully suggested. Lastly, I would return to the standing issue that I suspect is on the mind of the court. With regard to a question about the site for the compliance report, that's at J1516. It's a several-page document, but that's where it starts.
J what?
1516.
1516?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Secondly, I would say two things. One, Your Honors, I think the counsel for the commission recognizes that if there had actually been monies owed by us to the generators, that we would have a legitimate claim. And our concern is not just with respect to had they ordered us to write a check directly, but had there been any leftover credits, that in and of itself would present a violation of the filed rate doctrine. And if the court's inclined to think that we don't have the standing to present that because of the preclusive effects that it may cause us, we would just urge the court to save ruling on that decision. And that
you have to. This compliance report is dated March 2007.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right, the one you just referred us to. Do you have to keep filing them in the future?
Your Honor, there's an ongoing obligation to submit documentation to the commission with respect to interconnection agreements and our OATT. I think with respect to this proceeding, however, that was the final compliance report that was submitted. So if there's no other questions from the bench.
Thank you, counsel. If there's no other questions from my colleagues, then the case is submitted. Give us recess.